south. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Plour Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Friday. What's left of this Friday? 251-343-0106. If you would like to respond to anything we are discussing this morning, or you just want to send something, you're completely irrelevant. Nonetheless, it's the time we have set aside every week for our returning champion, still maintaining the belt here for the well over a year now. State Senator Chris Elliott on the line with us. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well.
Well, you're doing well. No complaints there. We're about to head off into special session land here. Once again, it looks like a midweek a start to the special session, but no reason to think anything else is out of the ordinary, not yet at least.
Well, not yet. Maybe might be the way to characterize it. We're ready to go into special session. Oops, not yet. Let's wait another couple of days and see if we can work a few more things out. But hey, if a couple more days, we'll get everybody on the same page, and so be it. And we can get in there and hopefully get out of there pretty quickly.
That seems to always be the goal, get out as soon as possible. Not that a lot of people are begrudging you for that. I mean, you know, the less you guys are in Montgomery, the better people seem to feel about things, right? But I guess the only thing that we're waiting to see is what's exactly beyond, or if anything, beyond reapportionment is going to be in the call.
Well, and that will be the interesting thing, and that will dictate whether or not this tends to drag on a little bit or not. And not to, you know, get in and get out. That's because that's the nature of special sessions, right? You're supposed to be there for one thing or two big issues, and then to get back out. You know, reapportionment is sticky enough as it is for most folks. When you start introducing other things into the call, it can get problematic. Although I can see certainly the need, and then certainly hearing from my constituents the need for discussion on vaccine mandate bans and dealing with that. You and I've talked about that before, and I think the governor could certainly handle that through an executive order, similarly to what Governor Abbott's done in Texas. She's chosen not to do that heretofore, but maybe that'll be included in the call this time around, and we can get that handled for many of the folks that are having issues with it right now.
And you talk about that though. It does seem that there's maybe a little bit of a groundswell for the legislature or for state government to do something here. What do you, we have these discussions about the supremacy clause, but that it's not necessarily it's an executive order. It's not a law that Congress passed with this vaccine mandate done at the federal level, that all of these discussions kind of go on at once, that we're really into some unique or uncharted waters here.
Well, we are, and I'll start by saying I think that the executive order that the president issued is non-enforceable. So I think we'll just go ahead and say that. I mean, I think the president on the face of it, and I think he's as much admitted it, is basically said, look, I'm going to threaten this, and we'll see how many people and how many corporations listen to me. And if one or two or 10 or 10 million do, then good, and I've accomplished my goal. And to that end, she's probably right. If corporations go along with this, then he has accomplished his goal. However, you're seeing in places like Texas, you know, the governor stand up and say this is wrong, but then the governor actually taking action and saying this is wrong, and I'm going to issue a contrary executive order. And while we get into constitutional questions about that, it at least gives businesses a moment of pause. And what we're seeing in Texas is they're simply saying we're going to let this play out before we actually act on this mandate. And I would like for the governor to do exactly that, follow the lead of what Governor Abbott has done in Texas, issue an executive order, and that will push the pause button while a lot of this gets worked out. And I think, you know, that what you will see is once it's worked out, we'll find that the federal government doesn't have the authority to do this, that you'll see a number of attorneys general across the country filing suit once the OSHA order from the Department of Labor has actually been issued. And I think this will all play itself out, and we'll end up on the right side of it. But in the meantime, it's going to take a contrary executive order from a state executive.
and just go head to head and see where that leads us. But it's like you said, maybe the goal wasn't the explicit stated goal. It was just to influence behavior in the private sector, and that seems to be working. But who's to say that even if the state of Alabama decided to do something similar to Florida or something similar to Texas, that it would matter that you seem to be on the school of thought here that we need to wait and see how it plays out for those guys.
Well, I think that's the neater, cleaner way to do it. The other is to introduce legislation and to work through it. The problem with that, Jeff, is we've seen this with the vaccine passport ban that we have now, is that acting right now, we don't necessarily have the big picture. We don't know what we don't know. And we saw that last time with the bill that the legislature passed. It was frankly lacking. And it needs to be adjusted, and I expect that it will be adjusted. But I would rather push the pause button now and kind of, put a moratorium on it, if you will, and effectively, and make sure that the legislation that we pass is the correct type of legislation and that we're doing it right. Now, failing an executive order from the Ivy administration, then we absolutely need to do something, and let's see if we can get it right. And I'm in favor of moving forward with something. But I think the neater, cleaner, more immediate action, and that which my constituents are clamoring for, should be an executive order from the Ivy administration.
Well, it seems like, when we were dealing with these issues back during the 2021 session, that they were put on the back burner, it seemed, that, we're never going to have a vaccine mandate. They would never go that far. This is how many times did you hear this, Senator? This is a solution looking for a problem no matter what it was. And then here we are today. Well, why aren't you guys doing something? And it seems like you do have to kind of be proactive in some of these categories.
Well, and I will agree with the proactive. The problem is sometimes, and historically, we've got the proactive wrong. So I'd almost rather the governor take a stand on this and effectively and practically put a moratorium on it in the meantime until we can get a broader picture of what is and what is not. Perhaps let some of this legal battle play out before we start passing legislation that may have unintended consequences. But again, failing that and failing action by the governor, again, I'm perfectly happy to see if we can take a step, because people are being threatened with losing their jobs right now. And it's important to me to make sure those folks have protections if they have, a religious exemption or some sort of medical exemption or something like that. I mean, certainly those folks should not in any circumstances be required to take a vaccine.
Senator, we had your colleague, Jim McClendon, on earlier talking about the whole process of this reapportionment and what it's going to look like. And I guess the question I'm getting is, when are we going to get to see some maps that he said there's nothing really for us to offer publicly, that we won't be able to do that until the committees get a chance to vote on them. And then you would have something that would be put up. Just like, any other old bill that you guys would vote on. But he did acknowledge that, a lot of the members are talking about the maps and what they're going to look like, and you've given input. How much can you tell us about? Because Baldwin County seems to be the one that's going to change probably most significantly of the gainers, because it's grown more than any other county. What can you share with us, I guess, at this point about where you are, or where the legislature is on what that will look like in the future?
Well, members in the House and Senate on both sides of the aisle have, of course, seen the population data. They know how much their district has grown or shrunk, and by how much, and where they need to be, and how many people they need to either pick up or lose. Baldwin County is home to the fastest growing and most overpopulated House district, and the fastest growing most overpopulated Senate district. And both of those are going to have to lose population out of that district dramatically. Now, the question is, of course, where does that come from? And that's the matter of conversation and discussion. And that will be something that the committee decides and that we see the final version of here in the next week or so. But until that's out there until those actual lines and where they are on this side of the road or that side of the road are. And, you know, it's not over till it's over, and you don't really know. In my particular instance, it's so much population. It's a huge part of the population. You have to just kind of brace yourself and see what the answer is. I've always prided myself on representing all of Baldwin County and working to represent coastal Alabama as a whole. So it's not material to me, you know, what kind of issues are important to coastal Alabama. I try to focus on that. It is material to me that the people in my district know that I'm working really hard for them day in, day out.
Well, I'll tell you this, and when you mentioned that you guys really do, you look at other delegations around the state, and Mobile and Baldwin County, I think, work pretty well together compared to, say, Jefferson County or some other places. But the place we just had on the county, one of the county commissioners running for Congress, Dale Strong, up in the north part, those guys, that delegation really works in lockstep. That's to get a lot of what the people want done in this part of the state. You really need that unity, bipartisan as it is in the legislature. Is that a fair statement?
It absolutely was. I mean, you know, yesterday, as a matter of fact, Senator Orr was down in the area at the University of South Alabama, but, you know, so was Representative Adeline Clark and Barbara Drummond and Senator Albritton and Senator Sessions and Senator Williams, you know, and myself, all there together. And that's both sides of the aisle from both sides of the bay, kind of pulling on the oar the same way. And that's really what you gotta have in order to make things work. And I think that you're correct. Huntsville and Madison County and Limestone, DeKalb to some extent, you know, Morgan County, certainly with Senator Orr, have worked very well together for that region. We like to think we work pretty well together here in this region and advocating for our folks here. You know, we have a natural barrier in the Black Belt too. I mean, for coastal Alabama, there's just not for better or worse, a lot going on between here and Montgomery. And, I think that bonds us together a pretty good bit here in South Alabama.
Yeah, the geography is always, you know, having lived all over this state, and I've probably told you this 100 times, but a lot of people in Birmingham look at Mobile as kind of the runaway province. You know, it's Venezuela. What goes on down there? Why is it even part of Alabama? We don't know, but it is. What do we do with it? Who cares? Let's go on about our way and focus on our neck of the woods. Seems to be the prevailing wisdom in a lot of places around the state when it comes to this part of the state.
Well, I can tell you one thing. They sure as heck would miss us if the tax revenue went to the independent, you know, province of coastal Alabama. That would certainly be felt and be felt quickly. I mean, look, there are issues that are statewide. There are benefits that are statewide. Obviously, coastal Alabama plays, whether it's, you know, the 6 million visitors that come to Baldwin County every year, the hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenue that we send in Montgomery, or the assets that are here in coastal Alabama, like the port, like Airbus and others that move Alabama products in and out, or showcase Alabama products like Austell and Airbus do. You know, it's an integral part to Alabama's economy, a huge part of Alabama's economy. And whether they recognize it or not, we're a big part of the state and what the state is able to accomplish.
I'm joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here for just a couple more minutes here on the program. Let's kind of look at things, I guess, big picture perspective, but talk about them as they pertain to your neck of the woods. A lot of weird economic headwinds right now, supply chain problems, labor shortages, et cetera, particularly in a part of the state where the service economy is such a big part of the overall economy. Are you hearing from folks about the struggles here? What do things look like right now? And is there anything the state can do to ease the burden?
Well, your question is timely. I've spent a good part of the week working with our restaurant, hospitality, and retail folks about and listening to them about their labor shortage and the issues that they're having. I spent time in Montgomery meeting with representatives from the Attorney General's Office, the Department of Labor, National Federation of Independent Business, of course, Representative Garrett, who is of like mind with me on this, looking at the labor issues that are facing our state as a whole. And just the short answer is the Biden administration has tanked. Or is in the process of tanking our economy. There's no question about it. You know, the $46.8 billion that has flowed into Alabama's economy has caused huge labor disruptions in Alabama's economy, to say nothing of the rest of the nation. And those chickens are going to come home to roost, and it's not going to be pretty. Our workforce participation rate is low, one of the lowest in the nation. It's getting worse, and we have got to get people back to work. The estimations in Baldwin County alone are that there are 4,000 unfilled retail, hospitality, and restaurant jobs right now. And that is alarming. And while I would like for the state to get better at what it does in looking at unemployment fraud, and we are certainly looking at that, that's not the state's issue, and it's not something the state can fix when we're being flooded with federal dollars. And those are certainly causing problems here in Baldwin County and across the state and across the nation.
And the supply chain part of that, too, that there just doesn't seem to be a lot of things on the shelves and a lot of problems there. You know, I guess there's only so much you could do that seems to be more of a federal issue, but are you hearing about that as well?
Oh, no question about that. You know, folks are having problems getting materials, getting product, moving product, and heck, if they've got it, having somebody simply to sell the product. Just the labor shortage overall, the labor market in particular, has been completely upended by all of this free money, free federal money that has just produced a glut of cash for people that safely say, I don't have to go to work. I'm not going to go to work. I get paid more to stay here at home and work these milk these federal programs. And that is a big challenge, and one that we're going to have to look at a state level as to whether or not we continue to accept some of these dollars because of the harm that they're causing.
Senator, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, but you've been very gracious as always. We appreciate it. Let's talk again next week.
We can do it. Thank you again, Jeff. Y'all have a great weekend.
Thank you. State Senator Chris Elliott there on the line. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.